Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Q3 2015 Intersil Corporation Earnings Conference Call. My name is Whitley, and I'll be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time during the call you require operator assistance, please press star followed by zero, and we will be happy to assist you. As a reminder, this call is being recorded for replay purposes. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host for today, Ms. Shannon Pleasant. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us today. I'm here with Necip Sayiner, Intersil's President and Chief Executive Officer, and Rick Crowley, Intersil's Chief Financial Officer. We will discuss our financial performance and provide a summary of our outlook. After our prepared comments, we will have a question-and-answer session. Our earnings press release and the accompanying financial tables are available on the investor relations section of our website at ir.intersil.com. This call is also being webcasted, and a replay will be available through November 11th. Please note that the comments made during this conference call may contain forward-looking statements subject to risk and uncertainties that could cause our actual results to vary. These risk factors are discussed in detail in our filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Also, the non-GAAP financial measurements that are discussed today are not intended to replace the presentation of Intersil's GAAP financial results. We are providing this information because it may enable investors to perform meaningful comparisons of operating results and more clearly highlight the results of core ongoing operations. Non-GAAP financial measures referenced during today's call can be found in the reconciliation of GAAP to non-GAAP results provided in today's earnings press release. I will now turn the call over to Intersil President and CEO, Necip Sayiner.
Thanks, Shannon, and hello, everyone. Q3 revenue of $128.4 million was down sequentially by 3%, reflecting the weaker demand environment as we entered the second half. I&I revenue was above our expectations, while CNC revenue was below. We were successful in lowering channel inventory to healthier levels and believe we've put the majority of the inventory rebalancing behind us. While many of our end markets remain sluggish, we are seeing some signs of stability in demand. Also, supported by additional new product ramp activity, our book-to-bill in the quarter was slightly over one. The new design wins secured for our CNC business that we've been talking about are now ramping, and the infrastructure weakness that has impacted our business for the last few quarters is starting to abate. Our automotive and aerospace businesses remain bright spots for the year as we continue to anticipate year-over-year growth for these products in 2015. There are two key messages I'd like to convey today. First is the ability of our business to deliver 20% operating margin in one of the more challenging periods for our industry in the recent past. With the structural improvements made in the business over the last two years, we are now able to weather these storms while continuing to generate substantial cash. Second is the observation that it does not appear that this down cycle will be a prolonged one. The end-user demand, while muted in several end markets and geographies, does not seem to be deteriorating further, and owing to swift action we took with our channel, the duration of the correction will likely be relatively short. I will provide more color on the product lines after Rick reviews our financial results.
Rick?
Thanks, Necip. First, I'll summarize the GAAP results. GAAP gross margin was 59.2%, about flat sequentially, and up 80 basis points from the same time last year. Total operating expenses declined significantly on a sequential basis to $58.6 million for the quarter. GAAP OpEx is down by over $3 million compared to the same quarter last year, primarily in SG&A, which was $23.5 million in Q3. R&D expense of $31.3 million is about flat compared to Q3 of 2014. For the quarter, GAAP operating income increased sequentially by more than $1 million to $17.5 million, or 13.6% of revenue. The third quarter tax provision was $300,000, resulting from the annual true-up of our 2014 tax provision to the final tax return for the year. Q3 GAAP net income was $17 million, and diluted GAAP EPS was $0.13, well ahead of our projection of $0.05-$0.08 for GAAP earnings per share. The non-GAAP results were also ahead of expectations. Third quarter non-GAAP gross margin was nearly flat at 59.5% and up 90 basis points from this time last year. Relative to our initial forecast, I&I was a higher percentage of total revenue, resulting in a favorable mix shift to higher margin products. For the fourth quarter, we expect gross margin to decline by 150 to 200 basis points sequentially, driven by a mix shift favoring CNC products combined with higher projected manufacturing variances as we continue to reduce on-hand inventory levels. With year-to-date non-GAAP gross margin of 59.8%, we are still on track to see a third consecutive year of incremental gross margin improvement for 2015, despite expectations for lower gross margin in Q4. We continue to tightly manage expenses, controlling discretionary spending and hiring to reduce costs without negatively impacting our R&D execution. Q3 non-GAAP operating expenses decreased to $49.5 million, with R&D investment of $28.9 million and SG&A expense of $20.7 million. We expect Q4 operating expenses to be about flat on a sequential basis. Q3 non-GAAP operating income was $26.8 million, or 20.9% of revenue. This is our ninth consecutive quarter of non-GAAP operating margin of 20% or above. Third quarter non-GAAP effective tax rate was 20.6%, and we estimate the Q4 non-GAAP tax rate will be approximately 21%. Q3 non-GAAP net income was $20.8 million, resulting in non-GAAP earnings per share of 15 cents at the high end of our guidance. Turning to the balance sheet, cash and equivalents increased by $4 million to $229 million at quarter end. During the quarter, Intersil used $16 million of cash to acquire Great Wall Semiconductor. Q3 free cash flow was $33 million, of which $16 million was returned to shareholders through our high-yielding dividend. Accounts receivable balances and days sales outstanding both decreased in the quarter. We were successful in reducing inventories by $3 million to $69 million. In Q4, we expect to see our inventory decrease again by a similar amount. During the third quarter, we also made significant progress in achieving our objective of reducing channel inventory levels. On a global basis, channel inventory decreased by about 1 week as we made targeted adjustments during Q3 to align distributor inventory with changes in demand that emerged early in the summer. The largest reductions in channel inventory occurred at our Asia-based distributors that primarily support our customers in the consumer end market. While the business environment remains uncertain, we continue to deliver strong margins, preserve profitability, and generate cash. All good indicators of healthy business fundamentals. Nathan?
Thank you, Rick. We'll start with our CNC business, which represented about 34% of company revenue in Q3 and was down about 1% sequentially. For consumer, the successful reduction in channel inventory in Asia during the quarter impacted revenue as we had expected. End user demand was not strong either, as sell-through of our customers' high-end smartphones remained soft. China continues to be a weak spot for our consumer business, offsetting what would normally be a stronger seasonal period. On the positive side, we are starting to enjoy yet another program ramp this quarter with one of our display products on a notable tablet platform. We see this as further confirmation of our unique ability to help customers reduce power dissipation and conserve battery life. During Q3, we also formally announced the products that are improving power efficiency for next-gen Ultrabook platforms. Compared to competing devices, we're able to achieve best-in-class light load efficiency, better accuracy, and fast dynamic response, which translates to longer battery life. Computing is on a path to becoming a more stable business as we benefit from the Intel platform transition that provides us with higher content and therefore a higher ASP. Computing revenue began to recover, with initial Skylake ramps in Q3 contributing to the improvement as customers built inventory in anticipation of new product launches happening in Q4. With customers well positioned to service demand, we expect computing revenue to be about flat sequentially in Q4. Collectively, we expect CNC to be up mid-single digits sequentially in Q4 as our shipments to the channel normalize and we benefit from the ramps in new business. I&I represented 66% of revenue in Q3, declining about 4% sequentially, less than the high single-digit decline we had predicted. Automotive demand remains strong, and revenue is expected to grow again in Q4, particularly driven by new power products and our video decoders for backup cameras. I&I power products fared better than expected, resulting in revenue coming in about flat sequentially. Booking trends have improved slightly, although demand for both wired and wireless infrastructure remains lower than what we would consider normal as customers continue to be cautious. We are seeing good design win traction on new products introduced recently, particularly modules. Our military and aerospace product revenue was down sequentially as expected. Trends remain healthy, and we expect to see flat revenue into Q4 and another growth year for Mil-Aero as we wrap up 2015. Our analog products, which represent the remainder of our I&I business, drove the decline, and revenue was down more than 10% sequentially. Demand trends in the industrial end markets remain challenged, but have not gotten any worse in our view since last quarter, so we expect a normal seasonal decline for the analog products in Q4. Given all of these dynamics combined, we would expect I&I to be down mid-single digits in the fourth quarter. In summary, we expect Q4 revenue to be in the range of $123 to $131 million. Based on a higher mix of CNC and higher manufacturing variances, we believe gross margin will decline 150 to 200 basis points sequentially. Operating expenses are expected to be approximately flat to Q3. We anticipate GAAP earnings of 6 to 9 cents per share. Earnings per share on a non-GAAP basis, excluding intangible amortization and stock compensation expense, are expected to be 12 to 15 cents. With that, we'll take your questions.
Thank you, Najib. We'd now like to open the call for your questions. Operator, please review the Q&A instructions of the call participants.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your phone. Your first question comes from the line of Tore Svanberg with Stifel. Please proceed.
Yes, thank you. First question, Rick, could you just elaborate a little bit on the inventories and the channel? You mentioned bringing it down by a week, but what does that mean in sort of absolute numbers, and what would be your target?
Well, we in the last call we said we wanted to reduce our channel inventory by about 5 to 7 million, and we were successful in hitting a reduction within that range for the quarter. So I think that's good. I think in particular, we brought Asia-based distributors down the most, and so I think that's in good balance now. I think we're close to where we would want to be. Maybe to put it in perspective, the Q3 ending worldwide channel inventory is below levels of Q1 and Q2, but still slightly above the levels of the second half of last year.
Great, thank you. And as a follow-up, if you look at the gross margin guidance down 150 basis points, you mentioned some lower loadings, but is there a mix factor here too, perhaps, where you're not getting enough contribution from I&I?
Yes, it's about one-third mix and about two-thirds manufacturing variances, roughly, in that projected decline.
Great. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Ross Seymour with Deutsche Bank. Please proceed.
Hi, this is G for Ross Seymour. Thank you. Najib, you mentioned that demand for wireless and wireless infrastructure remains lower than normal. Can you discuss what you're hearing from customers, if they're cautiously returning to growth over time?
They've been indicating that they've been expecting to return to more normal levels for the past couple of quarters now. But recently, we had actually started seeing the order activity pick up a little bit to substantiate those expectations from the customers. If you look at our infrastructure power business, it's running approximately 20% below same time last year levels. But when I look at our order patterns and backlog placed by customers, 4Q is looking a little better than 3Q, and 1Q is looking a little bit better yet. So there is some modest improvement in the orders we're receiving from customers.
Thank you. And you also mentioned that demand in industrial and markets are not getting worse, although they've continued to remain challenged. How much is China playing a part in this? To what extent? And if you can just give some more color on geographies or customers' commentary within the industrial end markets, that would be helpful.
Sure. If I look at Q3 in general, by and large, the decline in revenues came from Asia-Pac and almost entirely from the channel, and most of this driven by consumer end market, as Rick mentioned. If you look at the POS data in general, this held up much better. Actually, the POS was sequentially up compared to Q2, but below what you would normally expect seasonally. There are pockets of weakness in industrial, but it's not just in China. We certainly see this in China, but when I look at the industrial end markets and the applications that we compete in, the weakness has been relatively broad across product areas and geographies. China, again, certainly plays a role, but it's not just about China. On a more positive note, as I mentioned in our prepared remarks, this is not getting any worse. There is some stability in the weekly order rates that we see from our customers in the industrial end market.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Atif Malik with Citigroup. Please proceed.
Operator, we can't hear a question.
Mr. Malik, could you please see if you're on mute?
Let's circle back to him.
Your next question comes from the line of Craig Ellis with B. Riley. Please proceed.
Talk about a pregnant pause there. Thanks for taking the question. The first one is just a clarification regarding the question that Tori asked. Rick, are you saying that that the inventory correction is done, or that you still have a third or a half a week left to go?
I think we're essentially done, Craig. I mean, you always have inventories when you look back a little bit. They need to be tweaked here and there, some a little low, some a little high. But I think generally the headwind from the channel inventory correction we talked about last call is we're now back in balance, we believe.
All right. Thanks for that. The question that I have on the income statement in the fourth quarter, when I look back at the last 3 years, gross margins are generally flat, maybe up a little bit. Last year was probably mix out help. So why this year would they be down so much relative to what we've seen in each of the last 3 years and in the last 3 years on average?
Yeah, I think the main area that addresses your question, Craig, is that we're predicting an increase in variances. So we talked about the weakness we've seen in the analog product area that, you know, it's heavily services the industrial end market, the weakness we began to see in Q2 that's kind of continued. It's not getting any worse, but it's just kind of at a below run rate level from our perspective. You know, that ongoing weakness is impacting our manufacturing variances, as many of these products are manufactured in our own internal foundry. So as the demand has decreased, we've adjusted the wafer starts to be in line with that end demand, which is unfavorably impacting the utilization.
Okay, and then the question on the product program side. Najib, I thought I heard you say that in consumer there was a weak China environment that was impacting the business. And if that's correct, then how do I reconcile that with what was 22% LTE smartphone shipment growth from the China supply chain to China carriers in the third quarter?
So, there is one notable supplier into China that is seeing a lot of success, and we are not on that platform. They announced yesterday. We are participating on the platforms with Huawei, Xiaomi, and Lenovo, among others that are smaller. We have a good share with every one of them, albeit on their high-end lineup of their offerings. And they are having mixed success. One of those customers is doing quite well, and we are sharing in with that success and seeing good volumes from that customer. A couple others have reduced their forecast for the remainder of the year, especially on their high-end lineup. So we're seeing less from them. If you aggregate all of this with the good and the bad, I think the volumes we are at now are lower than what we would have all expected for second half. That was further exacerbated by the fact that we went and aggressively reduced the inventory in the channel. So as a result, in Q3, the consumer revenue went down a few million dollars, which was compensated by an increase on the computing side. So we came in about flat. But, of course, that's much weaker than you would expect seasonally.
Thanks for that.
Of course.
Your next question comes from the line of Richard Schaefer with Oppenheimer. Please proceed.
Hey guys, this is Joe Zaccaria on for Rick. Appreciate you taking the time. Congrats on the good quarter and solid outlook. Was hoping you could talk a little bit about your GMs. Gross margins. They've done well over the last couple of years, trended in the right direction. Wondering how much more room we have to go here, and what some of the puts and takes are besides mix. Thanks.
Yeah, Joe. I think that our target is still to get at 60% or above for our gross margins. And while in the near term, we're going to a little bit lower here in Q4, we still think that is achievable. So nothing's really changed there. I think it gets down to layering in, continuing to layer in new products as a higher percentage of mix, and higher qualities of revenue to help drive that. And generally, mix will be probably one of the main items that'll cause perturbations up and down as we proceed towards that goal.
Okay, thanks. And then with respect to Skylake, I know you guys see a nice content bump there. Wondering if you've seen any change in demand through the early stages here in 4Q as far as ordering goes or build expectations. Thanks.
Well, in computing, Q3 was the first quarter in as many as four quarters where we've seen some improvement both in revenues and in units. And almost all of that improvement came from Skylake. I would say for our business at least, the rest of it stayed about the same. So we've seen an upside coming from Skylake. And majority of these will be shipped in Q4. In terms of the availability of the processor and timing of different SKUs, I feel we shouldn't be the ones to comment on that. It should be Intel. But, there is reasonably solid demand for Skylake as far as what we see from our customers at this juncture.
Okay, thanks. And then any updates on the lawsuit?
No.
Okay, thanks so much, guys.
Your next question comes from the line of John Pitzer with Credit Suisse First Boston. Please proceed.
Yeah, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for letting me ask the question. Nishim, just a follow-up on the compute business. Up a couple million in the September quarter, and then I think you said in your prepared comments, flat going in December. I guess given the Skylake ramp and kind of your content increase, not bad numbers, but I guess I would have expected maybe a little bit better numbers. Can you help me understand the discrepancy? Is it still that the market's kind of suffering from not enough Skylake supply, or just help me how you see that playing out? And does that imply March could actually be up again as availability of Skylake gets better?
I think we're going to see continued increase in volumes if the prior processor generation transitions are any guide. Looking at the prior transition with Haswell and Broadwell, when I look at what we've shipped in Q3 with Skylake, actually it's pretty reasonable start. We continue to see demand for prior generation architectures Haswell and Broadwell in Q4. We're calling for a flat outlook for computing, but if the ratio of the orders from our customers between Haswell and Skylake changes, as you allude to, of course, that has positive ramifications from a revenue standpoint. But that's not the picture we have today from our customers.
That's helpful, Nisha. But then my second question, sort of a lot of increased speculation about M&A in the semiconductor space overall. You guys made a small acquisition in the September quarter. I'm wondering if you could just help us understand kind of your philosophy on potential targets that you're looking at. And more importantly, do you feel as if you need to get to a certain scale size not to be disadvantaged relative to some of your competitors? Or is it your sense that scale is not a significant issue here and you can be successful even though you're a smaller scale than some of the bigger players out there?
Okay, I think that's a very pertinent question, John. In the first phase of our transformation, we made it clear that we were not going to entertain any kind of M&A and complicate the matters for us. I think at this juncture, we are through that phase. I think the business is on a solid footing from a strategic and financial standpoint. So we are at the point where we can start entertain acquisitions. But having said that, this isn't also the primary objective or a priority for us today. And you know, while we'll be open to them, I don't feel that our size just by itself is an obstacle to competing and winning. Some of the sockets that we're talking about, we have won, and some of them are higher volume with prominent customers, or what's down the pipe that we are competing for and are about to win on the infrastructure side. We are winning those sockets against competitors that are significantly larger than us, but we're able to win those sockets because we are bringing some tangible advantages in innovation. I'll conclude, though, by saying, you know, we're very cognizant of the environment. You know, it is an industry that is consolidating and at a relatively fast pace. So this is something we're going to have to contend with. And, you know, a few years down the road, it's hard to imagine a company with our current size and scale, you know, to remain. So we're going to have to see which end of this we will be from a consolidation point of view.
Nishit, that's helpful. Maybe if I could sneak just one quick one in. You talked about in your prepared comments this kind of being a relatively short-lived sort of downturn. Is the implication there, especially what you're talking about with inventories being in better shape and some product-specific sort of company ramps, would you expect March to at least be kind of in line with seasonal, or how are you thinking about kind of the beyond December time period?
Yeah. So as much as possible, I'm going to try to refrain from giving, you know, forward guidance on Q1. But, you know, I'm going to acknowledge some of the dynamics. You know, we are in the midst of some favorable product cycles, and we do expect some of the weakness in some end markets that's been persisting for some time to start abating and start normalizing. So that's all, I think, favorable. The sell-through data we see in the channel is also giving us some confidence that things are not getting incrementally worse and things are stabilizing. So that's some of the data behind the statement we made about this being a relatively a short inventory correction, especially because we've gone to great lengths in Q3 to correct it quickly.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Your next question comes from the line of Chris Caso with Susquehanna Financial Group. Please proceed.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. The first question, I just wanted to clarify some of the comments on inventory. And you talked about the inventory reduction being behind you. Is that reflected in this quarter's guidance such that your guidance this quarter isn't anticipating taking other additional inventory out of the channel? And if that's the case, you know, can we kind of consider this revenue run rate as sort of the true demand run rate for your, you know, your customers' consumption as we're seeing things right now?
I mean, I'd say that there is no extraordinary steps we're taking this quarter to reduce it further. It might come down a little bit more in the quarter, but certainly not at the levels we've seen in Q3. We are going to be reducing our on-hand inventory, as Rick alluded to, and that has quite a bit to do with the margin expectations that we have for Q4. And in retrospect, you know, we did expect a decline in Q3 in gross margins and didn't materialize. We came in about flat, so now we're going to see it in Q4 as some of those wafers come out from our internal fab. I think one last comment. I am not suggesting that where we are at infrastructure or industrial end markets is a normalized level of demand. You know, what we might be shipping in might be commensurate with consumption, but I think that level of consumption is somewhat muted than what we would consider normal. So I do expect over time demand from customers both in infrastructure space and industrial space to normalize sometime in 2016.
Understood. And I guess that leads into my follow-on question, which is regarding production expectations for the first quarter. And you know, given you know some of your comments on Q1, obviously we don't know what Q1 will be like at this point. But do you feel that, based on what you see today, the internal inventory reduction that you'll achieve this quarter will be sufficient enough to remove some of the manufacturing variances into Q1, and perhaps you could give us some idea of the impact of those manufacturing variances on margins?
Well, I think the, as you said, you know, Q1, don't want to really predict what's going to happen because we don't have enough visibility, and I think a lot of it really does depend on the shape of the recovery that of, say, in the industrial and the analog market that Najib alluded to that we would expect in 2016. You know, I think that our in-house inventory should be in a pretty good balance based on what we perceive to be current demand levels and when we exit Q4, exit the end of the year. But what the actual levels of production will be in Q1, I think it's too early to say what that effect will be on variances. Although I would say that if you look at the industrial and infrastructure and market, the demand typically improves seasonally in Q1. And if it does, that should help us from both a mix and a capacity utilization standpoint if we see what we'd normally see in some types of seasonal uplift in those end markets.
Right. And I guess I was going to ask a follow-up question on seasonality, but I think you've answered it for industrial and infrastructure. But I guess typically the consumer and the computing segment would be down, and I guess perhaps that could be buffered by some of the design ramps if that should continue into the first quarter.
Yeah, I think that's the trade-off. And you know, we're not at a point where we can quantify, you know, which one will dominate in Q1, but you have the dynamics right, Chris.
Great. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Atif Malik with Citigroup. Please proceed.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for taking my question. I apologize for the bad connection earlier. Similar to John's question earlier, I would have expected a better revenue guide on the computing segment. Can you talk about any share shifts happening in the market or pricing pressures between you and Richtek and on? Can you talk about share shifts?
Well, if there's one that's favorable to us because of the Skylake transition. I mean, in Q3, we've seen a double-digit increase in revenue in computing, so I think that is consistent with you know what you might have seen from others in computing space. So you know we've the overall CNC number is down 1% sequentially, but I thought I was clear on you know the mix between computing and consumer.
Okay. And then in the industrial infrastructure segment, can you talk about the bookings, you know, here in the month of October? Are you expecting book to bill to be positive or more than one in your December quarter?
Oh, I have no way of forecasting bookings. I wish I could. But, you know, we had a good start into the quarter so far. That's all I can report.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Harsh Kumar with Stephens. Please proceed.
Yeah, hey guys. I had a quick question maybe for Rick. Rick, you guys had free cash flow of about $33 million. I was curious about the composition of where that cash is generated. How much of your total cash flow from operations, for example, comes from the U.S. in a typical quarter, how much from abroad, and of the cash you have, how much of it is onshore versus abroad? Just curious.
We ended Q3 with about $50 million of cash onshore, the rest offshore. If you look at it on a run rate basis, we're generating anywhere, I would say, from 30 to 40% of our operating cash flow in the U.S., and the rest is offshore.
Got it. Okay, thanks. That's it for me.
And your final question comes from the line of Craig Ellis with B. Riley. Please proceed.
And thanks for taking the follow-up. Najib, I wanted to take a step back and just follow up on something that you've been highlighting recently, and that is the performance of the transition businesses and the investment businesses. It looks like from what you're saying that you're seeing some nice strength in some of the investment businesses like automotive and others. Where will we be at the end of this year with transition businesses, and how much of a headwind will they be as you look at growth in 2016?
Well, I think we are probably turned that corner in the way we defined the transition business for you all in the past, you know, combining computing and some of the low-margin consumer business. You know, computing, I think, is turning into a modest tailwind for us at this point with the higher content on Skylake, even some with some modest expectations of continued decline in units. And on the consumer side, you know, we're pretty much done with exiting the low-margin businesses, so that is very little, if any, in our run rate, quarterly run rate in Q4. I think that is behind us.
Thank you.
All right, if there are no more questions, this now concludes our call. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect. Have a great day.